Welcome to the Mile High Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Daniel Knowles, coming from an altitude of 5,280 feet, and to bring you yet another episode of Full Tilt Tick. We are grateful to have you enjoying this episode. We want to remind you to hit the subscribe button, whether you are listening or watching this on Facebook, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, or whatever channel. Hit subscribe. We never want you to miss, and you never want to miss a Mile High episode of Tick. Today, I am grateful to host on this episode Dr. Sean Powers, who has been a longtime friend and a person I've looked up to for quite a while. And she has a Colorado history, which is one of the reasons why I was so excited to have her on this episode. She was the founder of the LCW, the League of Chiropractic Women, and she's been involved in the ICA, the World Congress of Women Chiropractors, the Colorado Chiropractic Society, which is a mouthful. And she was the president of that organization, Chiropractic Society of Texas, and many, many other organizations, including the Royal Chiropractic Knights of the Roundtable. So welcome to the Mile High Podcast, Dr. Sean Powers.
Hey, Danny, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
I'm excited anytime I get to talk to you. And I really want people to get to know you better because you've given so much and done so much so for chiropractic and chiropractors around the world, both in your own practice in the past, helping people in practice and helping chiropractic, supporting chiropractic and being involved, engaged, you know, politically as well. So first of all, how did you, I don't know this myself, how did you find your way to chiropractic?
Well, it started when I wasn't quite three. And you know how you have defining moments in your life? Well, I had a really unfortunate defining moment. My father died. And he was a man who was a big football player, strapping, healthy. He had just had his seventh child, my little brother. And he had a medical exam. I think he was like upgrading his insurance for seven kids. I don't know what the story was, but for some reason he'd had a medical exam. And 3 days later, he was dead. And we know the stats, right? 580 people today in this United States and all across the world will come, they won't come home to their kids because they have heart disease and they don't even know it. So my dad appeared to be healthy and then he was dead. So my whole childhood was, where's my dad? I want a dad. And so my career path was no more dead dads. Right? That's really what I was focused on. And so I became a nurse. My nursing found me in Davenport, Iowa. On the very first night of college, I went out and who was I to meet but Palmer students, Palmer College of Chiropractic students. Not just any student, but two students whose dads were DE speakers. And if you don't know what DE is, Dynamic Essentials, that is, a group of chiropractic that believe in lasting purpose of chiropractic, giving for the sake of giving, serving for the sake of serving, and loving for the sake of loving. So the next day, I went to their house. They explained to me what chiropractic was. They thought I should leave nursing school, but I was on a path, right? And I wanted to work in critical care, and Danny, you know well what critical care nurses are like, right? And so I got my first adjustment, and I became a chiropractic practice member way back then. I was not even, I think I turned 18 right after I went to college. And so that's how I got introduced. And then as I graduated, became an ICU nurse, within 90 days of being in ICU, I had the misfortune and the fortune of seeing 12 people die in 16 hours. And wow. Remember what my goal was, no more dead dads, no more loss right. of family. I wanted to save lives. And I found that in the most highly technologically advanced place in the hospital, it wasn't happening. And so that I think that week I had a chiropractic adjustment and it was like that lightning bolt, you know, and I didn't really, really get chiropractic then like I do now, but it was divine intervention and it sent me back to Davenport, Iowa, where I thought I would never, ever go back. And I went to chiropractic school. So that's how I found my way.
There you go. And the rest is history. And how did you find your way to Colorado?
I was at a Cox seminar while I was a student, and there was a doctor there looking for an associate. I was married at the time. My husband loved hunting and fishing, and he wanted to never go back to Chicago. He wanted to go somewhere where he could hunt and fish. And so I got this associateship. And interestingly enough, the associateship that I got, the person really didn't want to be a chiropractor. He wanted to go and be a medical doctor. So that was a very interesting, you know, circuitous way of how I landed in chiropractic as well. And his office name was Low Back Pain Clinic.
Ah, there you go.
All right. Was that exciting?
Yep, they're very exciting. And there's a lot of those.
Right.
So now one of the things that is, I feel, a very important topic these days, and that we have really highlighted throughout since Mile High was launched, was the importance of women in chiropractic. And I know you, as a founder of the LCW, value and feel that's important too. Can you speak a little bit to why that's important?
When I first graduated, I was a large class out of Palmer, and there were 7 women. And right, I think within a year of graduating, there was myself and maybe 1 or 2 other women still in practice. And so the trend that I started to see, I mean, you think about it. You and I know each other from when I founded the Chiropractic Warriors Philosophy Group in Colorado in the 80s. Mm-hmm. The room would be full of men and me, you know. And maybe some CAs if we were lucky. There were, and so I started to see these trends. Either women would graduate and they would either become the CA in an office, you know, if they were in a marital relationship, or they'd have a baby, or they just didn't stay in practice. Some of them never started, never stayed. And, you know, I always thought of myself just as a chiropractor. I didn't think of myself as a woman in chiropractic, but I started to see these trends, and I would go to seminars and I'd be teaching or attending, and there was angst, you know, in women, and they felt like they couldn't do it the way the traditional way was, or they didn't want it that way. And just over time, it became evident that women need something different. In some ways, not in all ways, but, and so I've been involved in Parker and the WCWC. I've been in the Knights of the Round Table, which is men and women, but they're separate groups. And it just was time when the League of Chiropractic Women was founded for that unity, and also the message about the uniqueness and how to practice in your way. You know, there's not one way to practice, but the way that works best for you and your family. You know, because some women want to be full-time moms and part-time chiropractors, right? And you can do that and be profitable and prosperous and raise your family. And yeah, so I think it just was, it's the nature of the beast of what we do, our commitment to love and to service, but also that dichotomy between my family and my practice, right? And I don't want to give up either of them.
Right. And now there's been a big shift. And I mean, when I graduated in the 90s, the same thing, there was a very small population of female students. The demographics were highly skewed, maybe not as much as when you were in school, because it has changed. But now, and it may have tipped, the last number I heard was at Sherman at that time, a year or two ago, was that when I was serving on the board, that the attendance had been, the female registration were 49% female and 51% male, which is a huge demographic shift for the profession. And it means it's a huge shift for us to pay attention to some of the ways we've done things in the history of the profession.
Right. And I think that's exciting and hopeful. hopefully, like the League of Chiropractic Women or women coaches like me, you know me, I've coached men as probably, I've had more men as my clients. Not probably, I definitely, like probably for the first 2 decades of my coaching practice, it was all men and a random female, right? And then as the profession shifted, but here I think is really what the thing is that if we have 49%, what is going to do to the world if 49% of those women stay in practice?
Right.
Right? Not just graduate, but get into practice and stay into practice. And that I think is the key where we have to see that shift is that, it's sort of that model for that uniqueness of how can it work? You know, if you are the prominent caregiver in your family, but you want to practice, like what you said, how we started in, you know, when you graduated or the traditional role of chiropractic is X amount of days, X amount of hours, you know, start at a certain time, end at a certain time. And it's all about that, right? And it's just not realistic.
Right.
But if for most people, it doesn't work for the kids, for the partners, et cetera.
Right, right. Yes. And it's a and it's a different balance. It has to be orchestrated in a practice quite often. So now also, people may not know this also, that you were the World Congress of Women Chiropractors, Chiropractor of the Year, which was awesome. Another honor. Now, practicing in Colorado, Colorado has had its interesting political history. I'm sure you knew then it's always had an interesting political history and over the years. And when you were in Colorado, can you say anything relative to your experiences of the shifts that were happening? I didn't even know about the philosophy group that you mentioned. That's exciting. But that and what you experienced while you were practicing in Colorado.
You know, when I was there, there were 2 different organizations. And as most, you know, we're always like this division, right? Right. And I think the battle always was the battle for acceptance and the battle for acquiescence, right? It, like that drive to get reimbursement, that drive to, you know, be a real doctor. And, you know, my political stance was and is to this day is that, you know, what we have is so incredibly valuable. And what we have is even scientifically more proven, more valid than when I started, you know, decades ago. But we knew what the reality was by the results, the outcome. You know, standing at the table, you have to, you know, would have to be in a coma not to know the impact of what chiropractic is. So, you know, I've always been one who said, stand for what you believe in. You don't have to stand against something, but stand for what you are, be proud of it, be clear about it, be confident, and be courageous about it. Because if you focus on the needs of people and the benefits to people and not on us and not on the profession and not on your own practice, that's how we, you know, burst that bubble, break that ceiling. You know, people want what we have, but most times they don't know what it is we have.
And that's a really important point because so often we focus not on the heroes of the story, which is the patients, the practice members are the real heroes, not our technique, not us, not chiropractic, but the people that we're serving, and we put our focus in the wrong area. So now in mentoring so many people over the years through Power Source Coaching, what are the patterns that you've seen in successful chiropractors and chiropractic teams?
Well, first of all, I think it's that definition about why they do what they do, where they come from in terms of intention and purpose. If it's about them, they tend to struggle. If it's about that service, that contribution, that shift for somebody, then their practice grows and flourishes. So what I see successful chiropractors do is that they remove themselves from the center and they learn how to be compassionate. They learn how to hold a person's hand on their journey. You know how it is. People may get what we do, like the very first visit, they're like, oh my God, I want this. I want everybody I know to have it. Come on in, you know, and they refer like crazy. And other people will be prove it to me, teach it. I'm not sure. They come, they go. And successful doctors and successful teams are the ones who are like, I am here. I have a vision. I have a purpose. I have the ability, the confidence to articulate what it is, to communicate and to connect with you. And when you're ready, if it's not today, I'm still going to love you. I'm still going to be part of your life. And I'll be here when you're ready. So it's just doing what you do, doing it well, doing it consistently, and doing it from that pure and sacred heart for the good of the people.
So well said. And that's so often lost today, unfortunately. And that you mentioned, for example, DE back as in your chiropractic infancy, I was never involved with DE or in part of DE, but I mean that they really focused on that service focus. And really seeing that over and over again in chiropractic as, you know, a reminder, we're in a service industry, so you need to have a heart of service. So now, with that being said, I'm sure that you have in mentoring others, there were mentors that you had that were impactful. Who are some of your most impactful mentors and what lessons did you glean?
You know, probably my very first mentor was my head nurse when I started working in ICU, and she instilled in me the need to study beyond my education, the need to be able to teach what you know, and she actually would have each of the nurses in the unit do a presentation each week. So we had to teach our colleagues and the residents and stuff. And so she kind of instilled in me, her name was Pat Ryan, a good Irish girl from Chicago, that you have a responsibility beyond just what you do, you know, and at the bedside, but that responsibility to teach, to elevate, to serve. And then for me in chiropractic, I was somebody who just always went to seminars, always hired coaches. And so, you know, the names, probably the most prominent mentor for me was Jim Sigafoos, because he was the one who came, I hired him to come and help me be better. I always wanted somebody from the outside looking in and telling me how to get better at what I did. And he said to me, you know, you need to come and you need to start teaching. You need to speak on the Parker program. You don't need me. We need you. And so, but within that, I also felt like he had given me a duty, you know, how he always used to say, take this sword and cut it the path for all people to see what it is and what we do. So he probably was why I was even more driven to go beyond my practice, to speak, to teach, to coach, to mentor, because we can do a lot at our tables. And you know this, Danny, look what you're doing at Mile High and in your programs that you provide, is that we, when we learn how to do it well in the practice, it's like that, like one of the keys to success is finding things to model, mm-hmm. right? You know, because if one person can do it, it's not because they're unique, they're special, you know, they have, I mean, maybe they do are unique and special and they have great gifts, but there are recipes. And so Sigafoos and, you know, just, I think anybody who stands at the table is a mentor to me, because, and my practice members were mentoring me because they were teaching me by reflection of, you know, their questions, their compliance, their referrals. You know, like for me, everything's always a lesson. Everything always has meaning. But Sigafoos is probably the primary mentor in my life for my dedication, my commitment, my love, my passion to elevating chiropractors and loving chiropractic.
And I love that you said how much we have a responsibility to teach, elevate, and serve. And, you know, and that was from your past before chiropractic, is because it's the same thing, right? Service is service, and remembering where your heart and focus is makes a huge difference and huge impact. Now, also with that, when you see someone who's in practice and you see that they're struggling or not doing as well as they could, what are some of the characteristics that are so common in those people? Because this will help people learn what not to do.
Right. First, there's two things. I think it's a lack of belief or certainty in themselves. They maybe are carrying disempowering beliefs or, you know, thoughts that don't give them that certainty and that confidence that they need. And when I talk about certainty and confidence, I don't mean bravado. You know, I mean, just that inside, you know, this is right, this is necessary, I'm the one to do it kind of feeling. So usually it's self-doubt. And then the other piece of it is doubt in chiropractic, right? And so I think when, you know, for me, two things that I always work on, well, more than two, but first of all is who are you and why are you here? You know, what's your intention? What's your purpose? What's driving you? You know, for some people, the first drive might just be, can I pay my bills? And that's okay, right? Because there's building blocks, right? And then what is the value and what is your understanding of the science, the art, and the philosophy of chiropractic? So working on who you are and then working on what you do and why you do it. And, you know, because I was an ICU nurse, and think about it, because you've been through some stuff, right? And you know what a system, like if somebody's not paying attention to something, you know, you could lose your life, right? Mm-hmm. And so in practice, I've always looked at practice and teaching what I do and doing in my own practice, that systematization, that intensive care focus, that attention to detail, and knowing that everything affects something else, right?
Right.
And procedures, policies, systems, after you get clear about who you are and why you do what you do and what your limiting beliefs and getting strong and courageous and certain about chiropractic, then the rest is kind of mechanical. But as human beings, we tend to slip, and then we have to check. We slip, right?
Right. Right. And, you know, you mentioned Parker, and I remember I, in the handful of Parker programs I went to when Jim Parker was still around, faith, confidence, belief, right? Faith, confidence, belief, FCB you had to focus on. And, you know, you're involved with Parker. You were their chiropractor of the year at one point, too. So you've had a lot of contributions and a lot of accolades. And, you know, I know you don't do that for the accolades, but it's always good to be acknowledged for contributions. With the chiropractic world now, what are your wishes of what it where it moves?
You know, I think personally, it's the best time ever to be a chiropractor because, you know, years ago, there wasn't the body of research and science and validity. Like we were just credible by our passion and the results that we would get, right? People would be like, this works for me. I love it. I love you. I'm here, right? But now, if you're new in chiropractic or you're like me, decades in chiropractic, you have the science to back up what you do, to say chiropractic literally changes the brain, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's the best time to be in chiropractic. And I also, my hope for the profession is that you really get, like as an individual, that if you could get connected to that purpose of the impact that your service has on people and that you're willing to ask for help and that you're willing to look at anything that gets in your way, not as an obstacle, but as something that will strengthen you, that will build your character. Again, I think that it's all about who you are. Who you are matters. And when you get strong about who you are, then you can execute things so much better. So I hope for our profession, we build our people, our students, our people who are out there floundering from the inside out, just like health, right?
There you go. Yes, there you go. And so now also, a theme that I like to discuss because I find it so important in my life and I find in practice is that so often people function without a team and they don't value a team. I find that pandemic in chiropractors. And they'll go for a long time doing things on their own because we tend to be a little bit of rugged individualists that do things on their own. So, you know, can you speak to the importance of allowing a team to support you and also support, you know, making that happen?
Well, I think that's a skill set, and that's part of our, you know, however big your vision is, the bigger your vision, the more support you need, right? And like, I mean, like in every area of your life, not just in the practice. Who is your team that helps you run your house? Who's your team, you know, that helps you run your practice? And so right hiring is a skill set, but, right. You know, you could hire right, but you don't know how to lead. You don't know how to inspire. You don't know how to elevate, empower, you know, to pour into an individual. So again, I think teams, like so often doctors are afraid of teams because they have that small mindset, right? Mm-hmm. And that like, it's easier if I do it than if somebody else does it. And so, you know, I see that over and over, you know, because I help a lot of people grow great practices. And, you know, whatever you want, if you don't want a team, that's okay. If it's really that you don't want a team, mm-hmm. But if you're not getting a team because you're afraid, you don't know how, you don't know, you listen, we can only do the adjustments, right? And there's only 75,000 chiropractors, and most, I don't know what the percentage of people who are actually practicing, and there's almost 8 billion people on the planet. So to me, it's our moral and ethical responsibility to be able to hire people to do something that we don't need to do. Maybe we can do it, but they can't adjust unless they have a degree. And we need to be able to do as many adjustments as possible if we're going to transform the health of this world. So to me, it's number one, I want to be a leader in my community. I want to contribute to society. If I employ people in my community, I'm part of the prosperity of this world, right? And so it makes my life easier too, because I get to do what I really love, the adjusting. Right. And if you don't love adjusting, hire doctors to adjust. And if you love managing, you know, you can manage a whole team. I have doctors who have, you know, multiple associates, you know, and they're doing more of the reports and the communication aspect. So again, team to me is paramount to your however big your vision is. It's necessary to be able to serve more people,
right?
And a lot more fun if you do it right.
Well, and that's a good point, is how big is your vision,
right?
So to expand your vision, you need more support, and you can only do so much all by yourself. You can only, you know, can't save the world all by yourself. I've learned that.
Yep. Well, like, God bless the lessons we get along the journey, right?
Right. Now, furthermore on that, when you put together programs, events, when you're at things, what are you seeing is how we can support students? Because today's students, you know, the future of chiropractic rides on them, right? So how can we uplift them more?
Well, I think, first of all, that's modeling success, right? Like when I graduated, and even to this day, when I'm traveling, I like to go into other offices and see what's going on. You know, people I don't know, I just want to see how other people are doing it. So I think the way to help students is, number one, that we need to help them see how simple it can be to avoid the complexity, to keep yourself lean and mean and be profit oriented, right? Not like, oh, I have to open up this 2,000 or 5,000 square foot office and, you know, you're already in debt. But I think the other key for students is you're practicing now. have that mindset about getting into the mindset of success, the systems. You know, I know you've got a lot going on as a student, and you're studying and you're getting tested and you've got clinical, you know, requirements. But the more you can get into other offices and maybe assist growing another office, you know, be in practice before you open your own practice. And the second thing I think is you really need to know who you are. Are you somebody, like you mentioned earlier, kind of we're like rebels, right? Renegades, you know, we're different. So you have to figure out, do you have the skill sets to manage, to run, to lead, to be able to ride the waves and deal with the, you know, the slamming into the wall and onto the sand and all the things that are going to happen when you own a business? And if you don't have that, you know, that behavioral style, can it be developed in you? Can you learn, you know, like that idea of you're always learning. So that's the two things I think to help our students is we need as doctors in the field to model success, to be willing not to eat our young, right? To our students need to realize they're still in school while they're out of school, right? Learning, being wanting to contribute to, you know, the profession, not just give me, give me, give me. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just such a fallacy that what you know, and I said that way back when. My head nurse told me that what I learned in school was good, but it didn't stop there. And it was my responsibility to continue to learn, to continue to study, to elevate my skill sets. And so that's, I think, that mindset of I want more, I'm destined for more. And the way to get more is to give more, learn more, and be more.
So true. So true. And echoes the things that I teach, because actually, you know, success leaves clues. And, you know, there's certain success principles that are universal. I know, for example, Tony Robbins often talks about how giving is, you know, giving is living. So the more you give, the better quality of life that you have, versus that, you know, people have their focus on the wrong area. Now, with that, last thing I'd like to circle around about is new patients. People in our profession tend to be focused on how much they need new patients and outreach in those areas. How do we really build a practice of new patients from the inside out?
First of all, I think that's another mindset and a belief system is that I believe new people need me. You know, there's so many people out there who they don't know that there's disruption, disconnection, that they don't even know what subluxation is. They don't know that loss of motion in their spine affects their brain and organic function. So there's two kinds of people out there, people who don't even know they have a need for us, and those who think they have a need, but they don't know where to go, right? And so I think that first you got to get like that, well, your mission. You know, I grew up in Chicago, so the old movie, The Blues Brothers.
Yes.
You know, I saw, I was running.
It's one of my favorites of all time.
When I was working out, it was like, I'm on a mission from God. Yeah. And like my mission from when I was a little girl was to save people's lives. And so I think being mission driven, and then it goes back to what's your office like from that very first phone call to how they walk through the door. Is it welcoming? Is it warm? Is it educational? Is there like, I had no idea that there was something called subluxation, that the nerve system, that back pain is irrelevant. You know, that the whole idea of taking them from where they are to where they need to be. And like that analogy I used earlier, like we hold their hand on their journey. So, you might need new patients when you first open, but if you're driven, if you're on a mission, if you're able to articulate, educate, connect, communicate with people, you will have lines out the door before you know it, because you're present, like that present time consciousness, that beautiful skill at adjusting. Like to this day, I really believe I'm one of the greatest adjusters on the planet. But I watch other people. If I see something I don't know, I periodically get adjusted by other people when I'm on the road, you know, teaching. And like, I'm always learning how to get better at my art, right? As well as the understanding the science and the philosophy. But if you get clear that people need you more than you need people, that you create systems of attraction and retention, right? So the reality is we can all only manage so many regular people, so many adjustments, so many people in a day. And that's where it comes back to team, right? The bigger the vision, the more we want to serve, the more we need a team to process new people and to take care of our regular people, right? And so I think you can measure your success by your statistics, and it's referrals. You know, do you have an extraordinary amount of referrals into your office, and is your retention continuing to grow? Because we all know chiropractic is not a luxury.
Right.
It's a necessity.
Right, right. And continuing to have that heart of holding that space of that new patients need me, and this is a necessity for them. Right. So often people lose that and completely shift their focus. Well, I really want to thank you. I know how much, how busy you are and how much you give to chiropractic and to the profession and to chiropractors and their teams and students. I thank you for being part of the podcast today. If you're watching this or listening, whatever channel it is, and that, hundreds of, in the countries around the world that this is downloaded, please make sure you hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode of Mile High Tick. And of course, everybody who's watching or listening to this has already cleared your calendar for Mile High 2020, August 20th to 23rd. So make sure you have that dialed in, and you can get all the detail at www.milehighchiro.org. If you enjoy our podcast, please share them with someone else as well. Again, Dr. Sean Powers, thank you so much for all that you've done, given, and continue to give to chiropractors. It's been an inspiration for years.
Thank you so much for having me. And I just want to leave you guys with this. Remember that you have the power in your two hands, your anchored mind, and your loving heart to change the world. And now's the time to do it.
Agreed, agreed. Thank you so much. And we will see you somewhere in the Mile High State.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Like our page on Facebook, www.facebook.com/milehighchiro.